Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and as usual, that means it's time for The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. Hello, folks. It's the other guy on The Other Podcast, and I have to say that the broadcast or podcast or whatever this thing is will not be exactly as advertised this evening. Diana is traveling and will not be joining us.
Yes, the lovely Diana is took a trip to Florida from her home in Valdosta, which, if you know the geography of Georgia, is down there near the state line. So we don't know, but she won't be back home at the intersection of Toombs and Gordon there. So, but anyways, I guess, you know, I hope that the local burglars aren't listening there.
Well,
Valdosta, probably not.
I wouldn't. Besides, she's supposed to be back sometime later toward the end of the broadcast, and so it could be a very nasty surprise for anybody.
Yeah, yes. She is well-armed and well-trained, and so anyone who
Speaking of well-armed, but not necessarily well-trained, Stacy, you had a theme going on the last podcast about aspiring rappers, and I think you've got some cleanup to do this evening.
Yes. I have actually now created a new category on my blog called Aspiring Rapper Update. And if you will go to my blog, The Other McCain, you will see that we are now on the return of the Aspiring Rapper Update, which leads off with what I call a headline stack. Okay. To give you an idea, let me read these headlines to you. Aspiring rapper fatally shot by two men on moped in Washington Heights, law enforcement source. Aspiring rapper found dead in trunk of longtime friend. San Antonio murder suspect is aspiring rapper also charged in deadly Austin shooting. Aspiring rapper pleads guilty to stealing $4 million from his job to fund music career. Manager for aspiring rapper speaks about Cobb County triple homicide felony charges. Accused Times Square shooter is aspiring rapper out on bail for weapons charges. And finally, former St. John's running back, aspiring rapper, dead after John's Island shooting. Now, I share this, and then I also share the Urban Dictionary definition of aspiring rapper, North American euphemism for a member of the urban criminal class. This unusual occupation is usually mentioned in conjunction with the subject either being slain or being taken into custody for a violent or property-related crime. A relative of the subject usually points out that the subject's demise or incarceration comes at an extremely inopportune moment, occurring just as the subject was, quote, turning their life around, close quote. So this is the aspiring rapper update, and we linked you to the previous ones. And now we've got some news out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. In the latest chapter of Baton Rouge rap drama, two local rappers were arrested this week in Miami after federal agents searched a South Florida house belonging to Fredo Bang and arrested his associate, Lit Yoshi, who was already out on $1.82 million bond and now faces additional charges stemming from yet another gang shooting. The raid came after investigators linked Lit Yoshi, whose real name is Miyoshi Edwards, to an April 2020 shooting in Slidell, Louisiana, and several months after a Baton Rouge judge told him to stop treating his house arrest as a, quote, paid vacation, end quote, in South Florida. Edwards, 22, already faced seven counts of attempted first-degree murder in Baton Rouge. He's out on bail? I mean, seven counts of attempted first-degree murder, and they let you out on bail? The shooting...
Well, the interesting thing is that there was like $1.7 million bail. Any bail bondsman wouldn't touch that for less than 10%. So there's at least $170K that's already in the clerk of the court's,
Yeah. Well, it's insane that,
there are some people that make their lives into things like that. And there are other people who have more successful, well-rounded lives.
Yeah.
I have, for example, a double anniversary today. Today is the 10th anniversary of the Hogwash blog.
Which
is where I blog. Stacy, by the way, blogs at TheOtherMcCain.
Yeah, you can hear me sipping champagne here. We're lighting up Cohibas.
I don't smoke. Anyway.
This ain't champagne.
Well, but the bigger anniversary is 42 years ago today. Constance Potter said yes to my proposal of marriage. And so 5 months after that, we were actually married. But so there's a double anniversary for me today, 10 and 42. And if you would like to see what the lovely Mrs. Hogue looked like, there's a picture of her on the blog today.
Yeah.
So there's some nice Rule 5 for people to enjoy.
Yes.
Meanwhile, in other good news of the week, Hubble is back in business. It's
the Hubble telescope. The Hubble Space Telescope
is back in business. It was down for several weeks. What happened was, now you got to remember, Hubble's 30 years old, and even with some of the refresh things that have been going on, the newest hardware up there is over 10 years old, and it's in a tremendously nasty radiation environment. And so the housekeeping computer that basically ran the satellite went down. There were backups, and they fired up the backup computer, and it didn't work either. So they're on the number two backup out of three backups. It's running. And by the way, the processor on the computer that runs Hubble is the same processor that was in the IBM AT computer. Right. It's basically a second generation PC from the 70s is what's running Hubble.
Wow.
Okay. It's just amazing what.
Yeah, you've got more computer power in your telephone.
Okay? Oh, I had more computer power in my telephone when it was a flip phone. but it's amazing what the guys are doing with that ancient, by our standards, technology now. And wait till you see what happens when the Nancy Roman telescope goes up. It's going to be spectacular. It's basically a similar mirror system with, modern upgraded electronics. It'll be going up in the next few years. Meanwhile, there's more stuff going on the ground about flying through the air.
And being
super,
I was wondering how you were going to make that transition. This is what we call a segue.
Yes, and being super spreaders while they do it.
Yes, I had a post this week called Texas Democrats Spreading COVID-19. You know, they talk about, you know, Joe Biden says, I believe in science, right? The Democrats, they believe in
science.
Hold it.
So what? I believe in the devil, but I'm not on the same side.
A sixth Texas Democrat who traveled to Washington, D.C. in an effort to prevent a vote on a GOP-backed voting bill in Texas has tested positive for the coronavirus. The unidentified state lawmaker, who was among a group of Democrats who flew to the nation's capital on a private jet, is self-isolating. A spokeswoman for the Texas House Democrats told NBC News. Over the weekend, that's last weekend, five other state Democratic lawmakers tested positive for COVID-19. And also, in the meanwhile, a White House staffer and an aide to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi have tested positive for COVID-19 after they met with the Democratic legislatures. And let me point out that Nancy Pelosi is 80 years old, which is definitely high risk for COVID. And Kamala Harris, you know, as soon as this broke out, she checked herself into Walter Reed Army Medical Center. And so, this is a triumph of science, you know. But if it, you know, but all I want to say is
political science, maybe.
If it, you know, passing along some scientific advice, if you've been hanging around Texas Democrats, you've been exposed to the virus, which can only be cured by drinking bleach. I didn't really mean that. Don't drink bleach. Don't quote me on Facebook. You could be banned from Facebook.
Oh, you'd be banned on Facebook if you just linked to an article at Hogwash.
But anyways, Texas Democrats should go ahead and drink bleach. I wouldn't want to interfere with what you're doing.
Look, science and math are hard.
Yes.
They really are. And I was puzzled by a recent CDC report that claimed that the Wu flu virus had caused a reduction in 1 year in life expectancy. Now, there has been a significant reduction in life expectancy over the past year, and there's lots of causes, and they may be related to things like the lockdowns causing people to do things like OD on drugs, but there has been a reduction in life expectancy because of the virus, the pandemic. I was reading a piece by Eugene Volokh at the Volokh Conspiracy, which is a law blog, where he was had a post up about the details of a report by Dr. Peter Bach. And Dr. Bach actually did the math on what was going on and said that the probable correct number for the reduction in life expectancy on the Wuhan flu virus is 5.3 days.
5.3 days. Not quite a year.
No. And considering that, looking at my actuarial tables, my life expectancy is alleged to be 84 years. 5.3 days out of that was, you know, it's not a huge risk. On the other hand, just looking at the same actuarial tables, I've got about a 3% chance of just dying just because of my age and that sort of stuff. I've got a much greater risk driving home tonight than from the virus. But anyway, the point that Dr. Bach made was that, well, I'll just quote from his article. It's not that the agency made a math mistake. I checked the calculations myself and even went over them with one of the CDC's analysts. The error was more problematic in my view. The CDC relied on an assumption it had to know was wrong. Now, that's pretty stunning thing for someone to be saying about an agency like the CDC that is supposed to believe in science and math. But apparently, 2 + 2 equals whatever the public health establishment needs it to be these days. So that's what's going on, you know, with that.
Yeah. 2 + 2. Yes. If you've never read George Orwell's 1984, you don't understand the importance of 2 + 2. Mm.
Well, on the other hand, there was
speaking of math.
Yeah. Well, there were some other things. There was an interesting thing that went down earlier in the week about NPR kind of getting after Ben Shapiro because he was leading people on and fooling them by running a right-wing website.
Yes.
Is there anybody on the interwebs more open about their political views than Shapiro?
Right.
I mean, Ben is straight ahead. I mean, the two things you know about him if you've followed him for more than a few milliseconds is he's an Orthodox Jew and he's a conservative. And it's like, hello, testing. But it's interesting that NPR would go after that. And I'm wondering, why are they suddenly going after people like Ben Shapiro? And so I looked at the ratings books for June from Nielsen. And I looked, I just took 50, a dozen stations at random, a dozen markets at random, and went to the top NPR station in each market, markets. LA, San Francisco, Washington, Minneapolis, Portland, Austin, Nashville, Milwaukee, Jacksonville, Greensboro, Memphis, and Hartford, Connecticut, right? And every single one of those stations except WPLN in Nashville lost listeners through the first quarter of the year.
Not only that, but if you look at this, in some markets like San Francisco and Portland, I wonder why, NPR is actually the top-rated station in those cities. But if you go to Los Angeles, NPR station is 14th. They're number 10 in Nashville and Milwaukee. They're 13th in Greensboro, North Carolina, and number 15 in Memphis. So apparently they're not putting out programming that the people want, whereas...
Well, it depends on which people. I grew up in Nashville. I grew up with WPLN back when it was a mostly classical music station. But WPLN is actually one of the founding stations of NPR. And they understand their market. And they run actually three stations. There's WPLN, which is all talk NPR, WPLN AM, which is all talk NPR. And they've taken over WRVU, which used to be a campus station at Vanderbilt that was progressive rock. And it's all classical now. And they understand their market real well. Okay. By the way, they're not the number one talk station in Nashville, though. Right. There's a Clear Channel AM station that beats them for some reason. But the point here is that if you look at the two cities where NPR and this group where NPR shows the biggest decline in listenership, they are Washington and Minneapolis.
Ah.
Okay. Well, let's think that through. Minneapolis has had kind of an epiphany about Minnesota Public Radio and its point of view, I'm sure, which is the NPR runs through Minnesota Public Radio there. And in Washington, WAMU has been having the same trouble holding listeners the same way that a lot of the other left-wing media have had trouble now that they don't have Trump to bash.
Right.
And so WAMU is closely, I mean, even originates some of NPR's national programming. So you can see what might be going on here, I think, about why NPR is struggling with this sort of stuff. But, you know, it might be better, as you said, they maybe ought to be reexamining their business model and how they draw in listeners rather than publishing stories that basically are
trying to get somebody kicked off Facebook what they're trying to do.
Look, it's just pure unadulterated envy.
Well, this is deplatforming, and what NPR was trying to do is the same thing that CNN has been doing to YouTubers and other conservative YouTubers. You know, CNN's ratings, if you look at their audience and compare them to like Joe Rogan, nobody's watching anymore.
Well, there's a reason why they have all those ads for geriatric medicines.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyways, but
I'm trapped and can't get up to change the channel.
I've fallen and I can't change the channel. Yeah.
Anyway.
Exactly. But
they're all for the right of freedom of the press, except for the other people's press.
Right. People who
there was a great, not a great victory, but a great nudging forward on equal rights this week.
You skipped something.
I did. What did I skip?
Fact check.
Oh, you want to do fact check? Yes, I did skip fact check. Well, why don't you go ahead with the fact check?
Okay, speaking of fact checks, yes, this is something that occurred to me, in which I have a special interest. Were the 2020 polls rigged? Is there any need to ask anymore? And I link a column from John Nolte at Breitbart.com, and I'll just read you this. Most pollsters, including all the media pollsters, blew 2016 and really blew 2020. And now they're blaming, wait for it, former President Donald Trump for their own failure. Something called the American Association for Public Opinion Research, that's AAPOR, released a report this week that admits 2020 national polling was the worst in 40 years, and state polling was the worst in the history of state polling.
It depends on the state, but on average, that's probably true.
I get down to that down below.
Yeah.
The far-left Politico reports the AAPOR is blaming, you guessed it, Donald Trump. And now we quote Politico. The most plausible yet still unprovable theory is that the voters the polls are reaching are fundamentally different from those they are not. And Trump's rantings about the polls being fake or rigged only exacerbate that problem. Quote, if the voters most supportive of Trump were least likely to participate in polls, then the polling error may be explained as follows. Self-identified Republicans who choose to respond to polls are more likely to support Democrats, and those who choose not to respond to polls are more likely to support Republicans. Close quote. The report reads, quote, even if the correct percentage of self-identified Republicans were polled, differences in the Republicans who did and did not respond could produce the observed polling error. Okay. This is crazy.
Well, actually...
No, it's wrong, John, and let me explain. Here's the problem. The problem is weighting the sample. Now, let me explain to you
what... I understand that, but...
Well, no, but the listener may not understand what it means to weight a sample.
Okay, yeah, I know, but here's the thing. You have your sample of... you don't have a truly random population. It's not big enough. And so you have, you find out who's Republicans and who's Democrats, and you have to then make adjustments to weight what you were polling. But, you know, this whole thing goes back to the Liberty Magazine poll of the 30s, where Liberty Magazine predicted that, FDR was going to lose the 36 election, which was real wrong. And it was because of this kind of polling error that they're trying to sell on this. Okay. So, I mean, they have a basis in history. You know, if you do a telephone poll and then a whole bunch of poor people have lost their phones and can't respond to it, that's the same sort of a bias they're talking about. But go roll, keep on the roll here.
Yeah. Here's the problem, okay, is that when you poll, okay, the first thing you've got to do when you're polling, if you're polling election results, okay, is that your first questions in the survey are intended as a likely voter screen. Okay, you ask two or three questions about their past voting history, or, you know, to find out, is this a likely voter?
Yep.
Okay, so screening for likely voters is very important. Number two, you poll 1,000 likely voters. Okay, then what you have to do is to take your raw sample, right, this 1,000 people, and weight it, as they call. This is the secret sauce of polling, okay, is the weighting of the sample. And one of the things you have got to look for is self-identified Republicans, self-identified Democrats, and self-identified independents. The way to do that properly is by exit polls of the most recent election. Right. Okay. This is why exit polling matters. Okay. Because then you can figure out who is actually voting. And, you know, it changes from time to time. Okay. In other words, from election to election. Okay. You don't know, like in from 2012 to 2014 to 2016 to 2018, different electorates showed up. Okay. And so trying to get the right weighting, okay, of the sample is essential to doing this. Now, I looked at one of these polls, which was the CNN poll, their CNN's final poll in 2020, right? There, and this is just mind-blowing. On page 28 of their report, okay, they had Biden leading by 12 points, which is nearly 8 points higher than the 4.5 points actual margin. So they missed it by 8 points. You cannot miss by 8 points accidentally. Okay, the science of polling is far enough advanced that if you're missed by 4 or 5 points, that's almost the margin of error. Okay, 3 points, you know, many polls, you're talking about 3 points or 3.5.
A thousand people in a poll in an electorate the size of the United States should give you between 2.5% and 4% confidence interval.
Right. Okay, at a 95% confidence interval, a margin of error of 3.5 or something like that. Yeah. So, but they describe it of the raw sample, the entire sample, they say 33% describe themselves as Democrats, 28% describe themselves as Republicans. 39% describe themselves as independents or members of another party. Okay, so that is actually very close, okay, to what the exit polls showed. Okay, so that their entire sample, right, okay, the raw sample apparently had a good thing. But then what they did, and I'm quoting them, the entire sample was weighted to reflect national census figures for gender, race, age, education, region of country, and telephone usage. And I read that and I go, guys, you had a sample that was D plus five. The margin of error, right, was, I mean, the actual margin of victory was 4.5. So in other words, the identified partisan skew of the sample was very close to the final margin. But as they were trying to match the census figures, they distorted it, okay? Now, I don't know. You know, I was not in the room when they were doing this, but you send me back these numbers and I'm saying, wait a minute, we've got a D plus five sample, raw sample, okay? And you're sending me back numbers that show the Democrat winning by 12 points. How did this happen? What are we doing wrong? And anyone could look at it. Look, you're using census figures to skew the thing, but people don't vote randomly. Do you see what I'm saying? In other words, people under 30 vote less often than people over 60. Okay, the old people vote. They got nothing else to do. Sit Thank around you. All day, 365 days a year, and here comes election day. By God, they're going to be there when the polls open. Old people vote.
Well, but there's a couple of other things. They underfigured the margin of the Democrat win in a bunch of states, though.
Name one.
Maryland.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Hawaii, California.
Okay.
Massachusetts.
No, where I never saw any polls of this, but let me tell you something. I was in Ohio before Election Day. I traveled up there to meet my wife's family, and I was there, and I saw the state. This was a state that Trump won by 8 points in 2016. But in mid-October, right, the polls, the Real Clear Politics average showed it as neck and neck. Well then you go into it, and what it was there were two or three polls that showed Biden leading by substantial margins, including...
Why are you assuming that those are valid, honest polls?
A New York Times Siena College poll in early October had Biden leading 45-40.
That means face preparation in order to depress Republican turnout.
Right. That's exactly what it was. It's not polling. It's propaganda. The very worst single poll of the entire campaign was in Ohio by Quinnipiac University, which had Biden leading by 5 points in Ohio. Now, I'm sorry. You know, I don't care how much you hate Trump or how much you like Joe Biden, for that matter. There is no universe in where Biden was going to win Ohio by 5 points. It wasn't going to happen. All you had to do, anyone could have done this, take a plane to Columbus and go drive around. You could see the signs everywhere. Trump won Ohio by the same margin he won Texas. Okay, Ohio is as conservative as Texas.
Right, but what I'm here's the point.
I'm ranting here.
Yes,
folks.
You are, and
I hope it's entertaining.
But here's the point about Maryland. driving around Western Maryland, Trump signs if you used the yard sign poll, Trump was going to win Western Maryland, at least probably 70-30. And he did come close to 60-40. There was a real depression even in the D.C. suburban counties about what was going on as far as yard signs. But the polls from Maryland didn't show Biden doing as well as he actually did.
How well did he do?
It was close to 60-40 here in Maryland.
Well, hang on a second, and I'm going to tell you something, because I'm sitting here looking at 538, okay? Yeah. And I'm going to tell you, and I will tell you the exact number. Biden won by 65-32.
So basically, it was a 2-1.
Right. And in a, let me give you an October 26 poll by Gonzalez Research.
Doesn't show him plus 30, does it?
58-33, that's 25 points.
Right.
An October 20th poll by SurveyMonkey. Okay, mm-hmm. I believe that's an online polling. But they had Biden winning 66-32.
Yep, all right.
And that's right on the money.
Right.
Goucher College had, but the, but.
Well, sure, what did Goucher College come
at? Had 60 in, hang on a second, more, hang on a second. Yeah, they had 61-30.
Right.
A Change Research poll had Biden 61-32. So
and
many
Biden was better than all the polls except for one, and he was outside the margin of error. And why? Because they knew who they weren't worried about surveying the state accurately, because they knew how the electoral votes were going to go.
And the point being that is that it is the swing states where the polling matters. If you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com, and look for this story, fact check, were 2020 polls rigged? In there, you will see that I link to Iowa. And if you will go and you will look. I'm sorry. Hang on a second here. Let me get the right one. Make sure I've got the right one. Let me see. I want to make sure I'm looking at the right thing.
Well, while he's doing that, folks,
I'm going to
tell you where the really important place to look on the other McCain is. If you go up to the center top of the blog page, right there is a yellow button. And it's very important, isn't it, Stacey?
Yes, folks, near the top of the page in the center column is a yellow button with the word donate on it. If you will click the button, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute to the support of the blog, and of course, also to help support the podcast.
There's something even more important.
Yeah, yes. But meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hogue's site, Hoguewash.com.
I can't believe he left out the most important reason to support there. Reason to support your blog.
My usual spiel. I was thinking about these poll numbers and I got distracted. I'm pretty passionate about poll numbers.
You should be even more passionate about this next reason.
Yes, yeah. But the main reason to click the yellow button and contribute to the support of the blog is, of course, to keep my wife happy, because she's always happy when I've got money. And so keeping my wife happy is job one. Meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hogue's site, Hoguewash.com.
Alas, I'm a widower, so I don't have a wife to keep happy, but I still would like to have support for the blog. And so you can go over into sidebar on the right, click on the icon of a tip jar. It will take you off to my PayPal account where you can support the blog, or you can scroll down and click on the link to the Hogwash store, and that will allow you to spend money on things related to the blog, and I get a cut of the action there. And of course, there are links to various shopping opportunities at Amazon that you can find both at the Other McCain and Hogwash. That helps support us as well because we're part of the Amazon Affiliates Program. When you find those affiliate links on anybody's blog, that's one of the nice things that Amazon does about paying a commission when those links are used, and helps support all sorts of bloggers out there. You should do that. But regardless of what's going on, since Diana isn't here, I'm going to remind them of the five most important words in the English language, which are
hit the freaking tip jar. And now, thanks to the inspiration, little break I had there, I have figured out what it was I wanted to tell you. If you go to my blog on the story, and after you, of course, you hit the donate button there, that's shameless capitalism again. But if you will go to the story about were 2020 polls rigged, you read on down there until you get where I link to Quinnipiac University's October 1st through 5th poll in Ohio, right? Okay, well, that's clicks to a link that also includes the polls for the state of Iowa, Pennsylvania, Florida, and also they poll the Iowa Senate race. Now, let me tell you, they had Biden leading in Florida by 3 points, okay?
Which was not completely out of line considering how Miami had been flipping back and forth.
Okay, well, let me
tell you. It was believable.
Okay, they had Trump, they had it Biden 45, Trump 42. Now, this is another thing, John, I want people to think about. I mentioned this in here. When you are a month ahead of a major election, especially a presidential election, when you find that more than 10% of those that are responding to the poll are undecided, are you effing kidding me? After 3 years, more than 3 years of President Trump, people don't know whether they want to vote to elect him, what they're doing, why you get those numbers, John. And I'll tell you, the likely voter screen is not, if you're not screening likely voters well, what you will get is a lot of people who answer the phone for the poll are not going to vote, okay? The I don't care, I don't know person, they're not going to vote.
Well, it may be I can believe that 10% of the people are not decided about whether they're going to vote or not. In other words, there have been elections where I've said, you know, I don't like either of the choices. I'm the kind of person who always goes and votes, even when I don't like the choices, because at least I can bitch about the result one way or the other.
Okay, they had Biden winning Florida, leading in Florida, 45 to 42. The actual outcome was 51 to 48.
Which is still a 3-point spread the other way, and once again, they're lying.
Are you trying to defend these people, John?
No, I'm saying.
Are you soft on polling?
No,
it's like being soft on coming. Are you now, or have you ever been a pollster?
Yes, I have, and I've been pretty good at it. But that's not the point. The point is that 6-point swing is outside their alleged margin of error. So that tells you that something's hinky.
Yeah.
Either with their level of competence or their level of truthfulness.
Well, here's another one.
And I really don't think that the problem was competence.
Here's another one. They had Trump 47, Biden 46 in Iowa.
But we did have a wonderful election that did just barely flip the Senate. So there it is. And now we have a wonderful nudging of equal rights going forward in the Senate. And the Hill has reported that a Senate committee has voted to require women to register for the draft. So, you know, that's what we elected. By the way, Maxwell Klinger was unavailable to for comment on that.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, part of what's going on, though, we talked about NPR's tanking ratings. A lot of what they're trying, those folks, the elites over there, a lot of what they're trying to sell just isn't working in large swaths of the country.
Yes.
I mean, I live in
especially in the swath where I happen to reside.
Well, I live in a small town in a rural county.
Yes.
Okay, so what does that say? Actually, I live the first house outside the city limits, but I live in a small town in a rural county. And
I'm still and veins bulging thinking about those polls, man. It makes me mad.
Well, but no one's buying it.
Anyways, Democrats to rule America. Vote for us, you ignorant, racist, hillbilly yokels, is the headline on a post where I share a story from Breitbart. Report. Rural Democrat candidates stop using party affiliation in ads. Democrats running for elected office in the House and Senate from rural America are starting to depart from using party identification in their ads in hopes of attracting more voters.
Or at least not running so many off.
Yeah, and folks, if you see this on my blog, this is the what is known as the Fisking format, where I go in here. And one of the things that you may have noticed is, and I was telling someone about this the other day, this is the earliest, the absolute earliest I have ever heard people talking about the midterm elections. We're still 15 months away from the 2022 elections. And people are talking about it on TV, and why? They're talking about it because they're worried as hell. They know that Nancy Pelosi is holding on to a six-seat majority, which is the thinnest it's ever been in the House. And they know in their hearts that Americans hate this agenda. They hate, I mean, literally hate with the fiery heat of 10,000 suns. They hate Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they hate Rashida Tlaib, they hate that woman from Minneapolis.
Maybe she's not from Minneapolis, she's from Somalia.
St. Paul, whatever, what's her name? What's that congressperson's name?
I'm not going to help you out.
Okay, I just drew a blank there. But they look at the squad and they say, who are these people representing? And I'm telling you, I am in touch with rural America, being of them. And they look at that bunch and the agenda they're pushing, drag queen story hour, drafting women, transgender Olympics. They're looking at this and they're saying, you know, and the crime. Oh, my God, the crime's out of control. The heartland voters, the small town voters, a lot of suburbanites are looking at this agenda and said, look, I didn't like Donald Trump, but I sure as heck didn't vote for this.
And my son isn't an oppressor.
Yeah.
Or my daughter isn't a loser.
A victim. Yes.
Yeah. You know, it isn't working, but part of the panic is it really does look like you're going to wind up with a Republican Senate and a Republican House in 2023, and you're probably going to wind up with a Republican president in 2025. So this is their last chance, maybe for a generation, to push their agenda.
Well, I don't. I do not like to predict the future. Election at a time. Let's see if we can beat Terry McAuliffe in Virginia.
Well, but I'm not talking about what I believe or don't believe about how elections are going to go. I'm talking about what their fear is.
Yeah, in their minds, yes. And time is running out.
Oh, they've literally said it.
Yeah.
You know, this is our last shot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm departing from what I wrote on the blog, but this idea that we have to ram through climate change legislation, green energy, everything. We have to ram everything through right now. This is exactly what was happening with the Obamacare vote. You remember that Obamacare vote.
I watched it.
Yes, in late 2009, wasn't it?
Over Christmas.
Yeah, it was the Christmas holidays in the middle of the freaking night, a bill that was pushed through on reconciliation.
I was sitting there watching the vote on C-SPAN in my brother's living room, yeah.
And they did it in the dead of night with Nancy Pelosi saying, you have to pass it so you can know what's in it. And this document that nobody had read, and everybody was warning that this is going to be a disaster.
I like Scalia's comment about it when I got before the Supreme Court, and he said, if we have to read this, we may have an Eighth Amendment claim.
Cruel and unusual punishment. Yeah, but they have made this same error before that they are making now. And it is exactly like those idiots who thought, you know, well, they've stolen the election and this is an illegitimate vote. We have to storm the Capitol. It is that exact same mentality. We have to do something now, right? Instead of like, wait a minute. Look, even if, this is a stolen election and a fraudulent presidency, okay? We can survive this, and we can organize resistance against it, which is, by the way, what the Democrats did with Trump. And the thing you've got to do, I think I'm quoting Saul Alinsky here, who said that there's three things the people need to do. Organize, organize, organize. And these guys couldn't organize a Sunday school picnic.
Well, they've probably never been.
Yeah.
Sarah Hoyt has a wonderful post that went up overnight about on this topic. So I encourage people to go over to According to Hoyt. .com and check that out. But on this very subject, and you're right about they're not being able to organize. I'm dealing with young mechanical engineers who are graduated from some of the elite institutions in the country who've never changed their own oil.
Oh my God. Well, what is it? Right, because you know, someone has pointed out, by the way, a female engineer, a computer scientist, a coder out there in San Francisco, and you know, in the high tech Silicon Valley, working out there, said the difference between women and men is that male engineers live this stuff. They spend their weekends building things, you know.
I work as an electrical engineer, and one of my hobbies is ham radio.
What does that tell you? Yeah, well, we're sitting here on the weekend with this computer setup that you've got here for the a podcast. You've got to have something going on. I believe your home is now a recording studio.
Yes, among other things.
Yeah. And you do ham radio, or did at least.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're a ham radio guy. You're doing this because you love it. You absolutely love it. And
well, it was,
I can't believe you have engineers who've never changed their own oil.
Yeah, mechanical engineers. I mean, if they were like computer programmers, computer scientists or something like that, it'd be one thing. But mechanical engineers? And that's the kind of disconnect from reality that we see, that the elites and their children. And we're coming into the fourth generation of these elites that were generated in large measure by their great grandparents being able to go to school on the GI Bill after the Second World War, and it was the fourth generation of the Soviet Union that fell apart. It's going to be the fourth generation of the Chinese communists that fall apart. And we're now in the fourth generation of that elite. And boy, look at how things are going. The third generation is just really screwing things up, and they're handing it off to the kind of people who are going into the streets for Black Lives Matter.
Speaking of which...
By the way, speaking of this, there's violence in the streets.
Yeah, you may have noticed this.
I'm staying away from those places.
Yeah, Philly to Chicago, hold my beer was the headline on this post. Every time I write about the ghastly homicide toll in Chicago, our friend Dana Pico pipes up to remind me that the per capita homicide rate in Philadelphia is actually worse. Do the math, says Dana, and the homicide rate in Chicago currently works out to about 27 per 100,000 population annually, while in Killadelphia, the current rate is about 35 per 100,000 annually. That is to say, it's 25% higher, the homicide rate per capita in Philadelphia than Chicago. And so over the last weekend, at least three dozen people were shot in the city of Philadelphia, three of whom died, and 33 others were wounded by gunfire. And I go into through there, and I finish up by telling you that if at the current rate, there will be a total of 558 homicides in Philadelphia this year, which will be an all-time record for the city. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, the city's population has shrunk drastically. Okay, people are moving out of Philadelphia over the past 30, 40 years. So for them to have a new record total of homicides this year, it's dangerous there. And the latest item I linked was a headline, Philadelphia police keep getting shot at while responding to shootings. In other words, they go out to investigate a shooting and somebody starts shooting at the cops.
Well, it's just setting up ambushes.
And that's why I have to remind you that Joe Biden got 81% of the vote in Philadelphia.
So, well, at least 81% of the vote that was counted.
Let's talk about those votes.
Philadelphia is also doing what it can to avoid compliance with subpoenas from the state Senate for an audit. So we'll see how that turns out. But Stacy, I just need to remind you of a couple of things. One is that a conspiracy exists or can exist, whether the theories about it are correct or not.
Okay.
So, conspiracies can exist with or without the correct theories.
Right. There are a lot of things that existed before human beings even had any theories about them.
Right. Well, you know, that's true. But and the other thing is, you know, if you think about the way things have been going, and we were talking about the relative level of incompetence about the elites who are running things. Just think about the difference between the CDC's masking protocols and the NSA's.
Yes, folks, that's a reference, as you know, to finally this week, the NSA admitted it did indeed intercept communications involving Tucker Carlson.
But it was legitimate overseas stuff where he would happen to be talking to somebody who would be a reasonable target.
But
as
he
a
was
newsman.
Unmasked.
Yes. And I will remind people that it was Joe Biden who unmasked General Flynn.
Right.
So why wouldn't we think that might be going on these days?
And speaking of anniversaries.
Well, that's actually not an anniversary coming up. Well,
well, every day is an anniversary for Brett Kimberlin.
Well, he has a post of the day at Hogwash.
By the way, I've got to tell folks, who is Brett Kimberlin? We've got to tell them because somebody is surely now who has not followed us before doesn't know who Brett Kimberlin is.
Okay, and when I try to explain this to people, I usually say, do you remember the federal prisoner who claimed that he was Dan Quayle's dope dealer? Okay. Oh, right. And that happened in the 88 and in the 92 elections. In 92, he got
and there was a Doomsbury cartoon strip about this.
Yes, about 3 or 4 days. But in 92. But okay, so the question is, why would this guy, A, be credible as claiming to be a dope dealer? That's because he was a large wholesale drug importer. Got caught with trying to import 5 tons of dope in South Texas.
Which is a great story, yeah. By the way. Brett Kimberlin.
But yeah. The reason he was in federal penitentiary for longer than the 4.5 years he got for that was that he was convicted as the Speedway bomber and got 50 years for that. But he was one of the last people convicted of that kind of crime before they got to truth in sentencing. So he was eligible for parole. He got paroled. But his parole was revoked for 2 years because he wasn't making restitution to a bombing victim. And then after he was in the slammer for 4 years because of the 2-year revocation of his parole, he got out, finally managed to get through 5 years of supervised parole and his supervision was revoked. And he's been running an outfit that basically flacks for the Democratic Party since about 2004, 2005, was deeply involved in election security for the Democratic Party during the 2016 election. But anyway, he was convicted as the Speedway bomber back in the early 80s.
We tangled with him circa 2012.
Well, 2014 is when we beat him in court. 2014?
I thought that was 2013.
No, that's when he 2013 is when he sued us. 2014.
We won in court.
Won in court. And then in 2015, we won in the second federal lawsuit, which didn't even get to court. Anyway, he's been trying to get some of his Speedway bombing convictions overturned, and he has an appeal going forward in the Seventh Circuit right now, and he has been asking for the Seventh Circuit to give him a freebie lawyer, and they didn't do that. They denied his second request this week. And so, you know...
And the thing is that he usually operates pro se, but
he's failed so much at pro se. He wants to have a lawyer. Not only that, they have a rule in the Seventh Circuit that you can't argue before the court pro se, and he's trying to get the court to have an oral argument on his case. Meanwhile, things are going along, and if you want to keep up on what's happening with Kimberlin, you can check out what's going on at Hogwash.com.
Yes, Hogwash.com is where you can always find John and on a daily basis. He either reminds you of the past of Team Kimberlin, as he calls it,
or he talks about
what's going on now.
Well, he has some enablers and followers that can be
you might
interest.
Call that. Well, we hear the great Boogie Woogie sounds on there, and so that means we are coming to the end of the podcast, and we will, of course, return again next Saturday at our usual time, 7 p.m. Eastern, although you can always catch us on the Podbeam archives.
Yep, and we'll see you next week with Diana.
Mr. Breeze.